Hello, Queen. Welcome to another episode of the Body Love Binge. Right, I've got an intense exercise, not exercise, an intense episode for you today. Let's go, shall we? The title, as I'm sure you already know, is How Do We Develop Eating Disorders? Now, what a ballsy question for me to do my best at answering. Of course, there are many, many layers to as to why one might develop an eating disorder, as everyone is unique, everyone has different life experiences. I have, however, seen many similarities in my clients, including myself, as we've peeled back the layers and discovered the root cause of why the eating disorder developed in the first place. So the question isn't why the addiction. The question is, why the pain? In this context, I'm of course speaking to the addiction in the addiction to restriction or the addiction to needing to be perfect or to have a perfect body, etc. The first word I'm going to use is trauma. Now, eating disorders usually arise from trauma and codependency as a child. So I'm going to go into this in depth shortly. Poor body image is usually an outcome, it's usually a consequence of trauma, not the root cause of an eating disorder. Some professionals focus primarily on changing eating behaviors with some basic body image work to support clients through recovery, but in my opinion, this isn't enough. If a fear of weight gain is still present, if the client doesn't love themselves, then we're looking at Casey or Quasi, however you say it, Quasi recovery at best. And that's not enough because why would you only partially recover when you can live in total freedom and self-love? Only focusing on primarily changing eating behaviors and some basic body image work may be enough for some, especially for those similar with Tabitha Farrar. If you've not heard of her, she's an incredible eating disorder recovery coach. She, in her own words, has said that she has had no childhood trauma, no body image issues at all before she developed the eating disorder. She developed anorexia simply by, I say simply, it's not quite that simple, but by epigenetics, which is a genetic response for those with the genetic component to anorexia. When you get below a certain body weight for you, for each individual, the gene gets switched on, the migration response gets switched on, and then the anorexia starts. That's another episode altogether. You may have heard of me speak about that before. If you would like me to speak about that more in depth, please comment below. Or if you're not watching the YouTube, you can send a voice note on Spotify, I think. You can get in touch with me anyway and let me know, and I will record an episode speaking to it specifically. But for most people with eating disorders, in order to fully recover, we have to go deeper. Because for me, it wasn't just simply I got underweight for one reason or another, the anorexia gene switched on, and then off I went into full-blown anorexia. It was more complex than that for me. There was a lot of body image stuff in there, a lot of perfectionism in there, a lot of stuff which we're going to go into in a moment. Many people, including my past self many years ago, think that poor body image, fear of weight gain is the cause of eating disorders by attempting to fit into society and receive praise, validation, and love. Now, this can absolutely be the case, especially due to the societal pressures that we live in today. But in my opinion, disordered eating that develops after childhood or adolescence is usually born from the root fear of weight gain and the pressure to look a certain way, because disordered eating is normalized in society, and that's not okay. So just to recap, disordered eating that develops after childhood or adolescence is usually born from the fear of weight gain and the pressure to look a certain way because disordered eating is normalized in society. An eating disorder, however, that is developed in childhood and adolescence and which can reappear at any time later in life if it's not completely healed, is due to deeper reasons other than just wanting to look a certain way. I'm going to give a quote now by Gwyneth Olwyn, and it's a really good way of describing how the eating disorder is perceived within. An eating disorder is a misinterpretation of food as a threat. Now, let me go into self-worth and body image. The degree to which a person's self-worth and happiness are dependent on the way they look is the degree to which they will suffer from an eating disorder as a consequence of them trying to control their body. I'm going to repeat that again because this is really key. The degree to which a person's self-worth and happiness are dependent on the way they look is the degree to which they will suffer from an eating disorder as a consequence of them trying to control their body. Now, because we're going to the root cause here, we're not just pruning the branches, we're getting right to the root. Why the need to control the body in the first place? There's a few examples here, but there is many more. The needing to be perfect. If we have the perfect body, we feel safer, we get praise, validated, and love from society, but it stems from the need to be perfect. People pleasing, the desire to be loved and accepted and that feeling of safety, fearing rejection of any kind, needing to be small, needing to be hidden and unnoticed in the world, that's a big one. Wanting someone to take care of them, so being sick. So if you're sick with an eating disorder, hopefully people take care of you, people are concerned about you, and we just may have been desperately seeking that care and that love and that security, and wanting to see the pain, wanting others to see the pain that they're feeling on the inside. So those that have experienced trauma, and they may not even be aware of this, they feel a lot of emotional pain within. Developing an eating disorder is a way of others externally seeing the pain that they are in from an external standpoint. So that's also a big one that I've seen and acknowledged within myself and with my clients. So there's many reasons why someone would want to have a perfect body and try to lose weight. It's not just because of society. In my opinion, it's a lot deeper than that. And we're going to go into these on a deeper level. So if a percentage of someone's self-worth is, let's say, 90% dependent on how thin they are, the old me, then this person will almost certainly develop a severe eating disorder. If a percentage of someone's self-worth is, let's say, 30% dependent on how thin they are, then this person will most certainly develop disordered eating. Of course, the only difference between disordered eating and an eating disorder obviously is the diagnostics, but you don't have to be diagnosed. It's the severity on what negative impact it has on your life. So an eating disorder has a severe negative impact on your life, and disordered eating has a negative impact on your life, but perhaps you're still able to do normal life things. But if you have disordered eating or an eating disorder, it doesn't matter how severe you think it is. If it's negatively affecting your life, you need to get help, because you do not have to live with it and just cope with it forever. Okay. So now I want to go into the depth of this episode, and it might be a lot for some. So just listen with an open heart, open mind, be kind to yourself, notice what comes up as I'm sharing this, and let me know your feedback, please. Childhood trauma. These are the deeper reasons why we develop eating disorders. Those who develop eating disorders from childhood, from adolescence, almost always have experienced abuse, shame, codependency, which leads to process addictions and anxiety. The eating disorder is a way of coping with the abuse. Now, before you automatically reject the fact that you've not been abused as a child, I didn't think I had either. So hear me out on this. Types of abuse that cause codependency are enmeshment. Enmeshment is a concept in psychology and psychotherapy introduced by Salvador Minuchin, 1921, from 2017, to describe families where personal boundaries are diffused, subsystems undifferentiated, and over-concern for others leads to loss of autonomous development. Now, let me put that into Victorian language. Signs of enmeshment are: you feel anxious when spending time alone or apart from the other person in the relationship. So as I go through this list, by the way, think back to your childhood, and you may or may not notice that you've repeated the same feelings and patterns as an adult with just different relationships. So let me start from the beginning again. Signs of enmeshment. You feel anxious when spending time alone or apart from the other person in the relationship. You have a hard time feeling happy if the other person is unhappy. You prioritize their needs and erase your own, or you subconsciously assume they need the same things that you need. You feel responsible for their emotions as if it's your job to make them happy. This can feel like you are a parent to your parent or your partner. You are an avid people pleaser. And enmeshment is abuse because it uses the child to take care of the caregiver. The caregiver may not know, most likely, most of the time, they do not know they're abusing the child. It's not their fault, it's their responsibility, but without awareness, they don't know, and they would have been parented the same way, which is how generational trauma gets passed down. Enmeshment trauma is one of the most misunderstood forms of emotional abuse, which is why so many people suffer from it without realizing the impact it has on their relationships. Abuse within an enmeshed family system is a unique sort of trauma. Some survivors of such trauma may not recognize their experiences as traumatic and may even defend their abusers. Now, when I went through this with my incredible coach, Michelle Zelle, not that long ago, and she's still my coach now, she's awesome. I was very defensive against my mom. So when I was understanding all of this, I was like, fuck no, 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 no. That what I wasn't abused. My mum wasn't like that. And then until you are shown this big mirror and understanding, and then it just hit me and I was like, holy fucking shit. So if you're experiencing, what word am I looking for? If you're experiencing a defensive feeling, and I'm not, by the way, I don't want people to just, I don't want everyone to be abused. I don't want everyone to decide they've been abused when they haven't. That's not what I'm doing here. But there's a reason why you have an eating disorder. There's a reason why you have disordered eating. So it's really key to take a deep look at what went on in your childhood. So enmeshment describes family relationships that lack boundaries, such that roles and expectations are confused. Parents are overly and inappropriately reliant on their children for support, and children are not allowed to become emotionally independent or separate from their parents. I remember when I was a child and we would go to people's houses for dinner parties, I would not want to play with the children. I would want to be a grown-up. I would want to stay with my mom. I copied my mom with everything, hence why I was dieting when I was 9. I was so enmeshed with my mom, and neither of us knew that this was happening. And we were best friends, but you're not supposed to be best friends with your parents. So if that's sounding resonating, then, you know, listen up. The next thing is neglect. In the context of caregiving, neglect is a form of abuse where the perpetrator, who is responsible for caring for someone who is unable to care for themselves like a child, fails to do so. It can be a result of carelessness, indifference, or unwillingness and abuse. For example, I was taken to my grandma's house every day when my mum and dad were at work. My grandma used to lock me outside whenever I cried until I stopped crying. She would bully me. Honestly, she would literally say she hated me. I was the queer one out of the family. I was the ugly one. I was rejected and abused daily with my grandma. She used to emotionally abuse me a lot. Sometimes physical abuse in terms of she would like pour washing up liquid down my throat. She would like cut my hair, like a massive chunk of my hair off. She wouldn't hit me or anything, but still, my parents delivered me there every day, even though they knew that was happening. And honestly, they actually laughed it off. So it wasn't until I had this incredible coaching via Michelle that I would be like, yeah, my grandma used to lock me outside when I'd cry. And, you know, no wonder I don't want to, like, I had an issue with crying. And I'd just laugh at it as if it was like a funny thing to do. It's not fucking funny. That was like abuse. So there are four types of neglect. Physical neglect, of course, that's like not feeding, watering, sheltering, meeting the physical needs of a child. As this includes food as well. So if you have experienced physical neglect, that might look like you not having enough food to eat, whether or not it was your parents' fault, whether they had enough money, whatever it may be. We're not pointing fingers here, but physical abuse is not having your physical needs met, not having a full belly when you're hungry, for an example. The second type of neglect is emotional neglect. And obviously that looks like I guess that was physical for me and emotional, the one that I shared about my grandma. Medical neglect, so not having the medical attention that you actually needed when you needed it. And educational neglect, the caregiver not providing you with the right education to grow and to thrive as a human, because as a child, you cannot do it alone. You have to be taken care of. We forget these things, or we're not aware of these things. The next one is emotional abandonment. Early childhood experiences are the big contributor to developing abandonment issues when you become an adult. The traumatic event might include the loss of a parent by divorce. I live with divorced parents, and my mum left my dad about 3 times. And then my dad cheated on my mum however many times. And it was very unstable, my upbringing. I remember finding a letter when I was 10. I think I was 9 or 10. I found a letter that I wasn't supposed to find. My mum had wrote a letter to my dad basically trying to divorce him. I didn't understand it fully, but I remember reading it and feeling so heartbroken and alone. I remember crying my eyes out, and I have emotion now. Like, I just remember being so upset and not understanding what was going on and feeling so unsafe. And again, no blame here at all, but this, if you've had parents that have split up and divorced, then you might have experienced emotional abandonment. If you are a parent listening to this and you have broke up or divorced from your partner when you have children, this does not automatically mean that you are giving your children an experience of emotional abandonment either, by the way. So be kind to yourself through this, okay? This is just my experience. So it can look like emotional abandonment, the traumatic event, including the loss of a parent by divorce or death, or not getting enough physical or emotional care as a child. Emotional abandonment occurs when parents do not let their children express themselves emotionally. This might look like be quiet, stop crying, any kind of suppression of the child's emotion, whether you need to behave in a certain public area, anything like that. They might ridicule their children. So of course it was laughed at when I was shut outside. When I cried, it was just a laughing matter. It wasn't taken seriously. Putting too much pressure on their children to be perfect. Now, this doesn't have to be known by the parents that they're doing this. This doesn't have to be in words. The parent doesn't have to say to the child, you need to be perfect. Actions always speak louder than words. So if you've been taught through actions, through your parents, that being the best gets you love and attention, and it's really good if you're the best at something, or if your parents are like jokingly putting someone down who isn't the best, all of that stuff through action is showing you as a child that you need to be perfect in order to be safe. So treating their children like their peers as well, that can be a sign of emotional abandonment. And I do want to speak a bit more to the divorce as well that my parents went through. So again, having a divorce, if you are a parent that has divorced and you have children, it doesn't mean that you are creating an experience for your children that is emotional abandonment. From my experience, having my parents divorce, it was the way it was done. So one time my dad brought me and my sister and my mom into the living room, and he just said, "Mom doesn't love us anymore. She's leaving." Obviously, there's a better fucking way to tell your children that you're breaking up. There's also a better way to tell your children that you're breaking up, other than my mom leaving and then coming back and then leaving, then coming back. And I'm like, what the hell is she doing? And every time she left, I didn't have a choice to go with her. So she just completely left, and I was left with my dad, who actually kept his love from me and was like very emotionally unavailable. So anyway, I don't want to go into my story, but I just want to speak to that about divorce. A fear of abandonment presents itself in people who seem like people pleasers. Does that sound familiar? Or need continuous reassurance that they are loved and that they are enough. This is also a consistent anxiety that occurs with abandonment issues. So common signs of abandonment issues include giving too much or being over eager to please. So always over giving, over delivering, jealousy in your relationships or jealous of others, trouble trusting your partner's intentions, feeling insecure about your relationship, having difficulty in feeling intimate emotionally, needing to control or be controlled by your partner, and settling in unsatisfactory relationships. It's not uncommon for you to want your parents to treat you the same way as you were treated as a child. Is any of this resonating or sounding familiar? Now let's talk about shame. Shame and perfectionism are two sides of the same coin. And if you have experienced any of the above, what I've just spoken about during your childhood, then you'll be harboring a lot of shame. And shame is really painful. Shame is a deeply painful, self-conscious emotion often associated with negative self-evaluation, motivation to quit, and feelings of pain, exposure, distrust, powerlessness, and worthlessness. That is a complete opposite of who you really are at a core level. Shame creates deep feelings of inadequacy, inferiority, or somehow being unlovable. It causes low self-esteem and codependency. It can lead to other problems such as aggression, PTSD, perfectionism, antisocial behavior, depression, eating disorders, and addiction. So let's talk about codependency then. I would bank on the fact that anyone listening to this has either experienced codependency, is experiencing codependency, or is a professional supporting clients with codependency. Because in an attempt to cope with codependency, we turn to either or all or a mixture of the following. Process addictions, they can look like sexual compulsivity, sexual aversion, love avoidance and love addiction, spending, debting, gambling, being obsessed with work. It can look like overeating, bulimia, anorexia, addiction to, it says here on this tree, addiction to sugar. Now, I don't agree with that, but there's a reason why so many of us gravitate towards sugar, because it helps us to feel better about ourselves. There's many layers to this. Another process addiction looks like an addiction to exercise, an addiction to learning. How many of you are listening to podcast after podcast after audiobook and reading and doing programs and all of that, and you're not actually taking time to implement and just be and become embodied with what you've learned? It can look like a spirituality addiction, so being addicted to the need of the support of a higher power. It can also, codependency, the way to cope with codependency also can come out in chemical addictions. That can look like the addiction to nicotine, caffeine, alcohol, solvents, pain reliefs, inhalants, depressants, opiates, hallucination drugs. It can look like coping with codependency. You can develop anxiety disorders. This will probably be relevant to many of you listening. It can look like post-traumatic stress disorder, phobias, panic attacks, obsessive compulsive disorders, and it can look like mood disorders such as depression, bipolar, mixed mood disorders, all of that. There's an actual beautiful tree, a codependency tree that has been given to me by my incredible coach, Michelle Zelle. And it was originally from the incredible Pia Melody. Her books are really good. And I've created it again and I've popped it in my blog. So if you're watching this or listening to this, check out the link below and you'll be able to see it in a really, really helpful image of what this all looks like. So there is always, always a reason why an eating disorder is developed, because it serves a purpose until it doesn't anymore. How do we start to navigate all this then? So awareness is key, and it can be really helpful to understand why. But my question to you is, what have you been seeking and why? An essential part of healing and living in full recovery is to discover what you have been seeking and what you have done in an attempt to get those things. Excuse me. So I was seeking unconditional love, acceptance, safety, and security. And many of us are, to be honest, because I had so much pressure to be perfect. I took responsibility for my mum's emotions, codependency. I was always seeking a way to be good enough, accepted, loved enough. As a child, I had experienced enmeshment, abandonment, neglect, and abuse, which created a shitload of shame. I was the hero in the family and the scapegoat, meaning I was the hero because my parents had me to try and save the marriage, which I failed at because I didn't save the marriage. So before I was even born, I was abused because I was used to save the marriage. I've been told that. So I was always the one, like when anyone had arguments, I was the one keeping the peace. I was the one getting in the middle to try and make everyone okay. It was my job to hold the peace in the family. I was also the scapegoat. Everything was always my fault. And I'm not saying it wasn't my fault. A lot of the time it was, because I was a bit of a rebel. I wonder why. But it was always my fault, even if it wasn't my fault. And as a result of this endless seeking, the seeking of acceptance, safety, security, unconditional love, I became addicted to, this is a process addiction that I became addicted to, pleasure, adoration, validation, and excitement. So that would look like massive risk-taking, choosing to be with a narcissist and being physically abused for 6 years in one of my relationships. An addiction to having sex with men to try and feel loved and enough, an addiction to going on dates. I've never been single in my entire life. This resulted in multiple eating disorders, starting from anorexia at the age of around 12. I started dieting from the age of nine, which morphed into binge eating and bulimia until I was 30 years old. So the eating disorders were a symptom of my seeking pleasure, adoration, validation, excitement, because I didn't yet know how to reparent myself and give myself what I didn't get and needed as a child. There's a difference between what you want and what you need. So I wanted pleasure, adoration, validation, excitement, but I actually needed unconditional love, acceptance, and safety. But I didn't even know that. And I was just trying to meet what I thought I needed, which is what I wanted. Pleasure through the sex and chocolate and anything that brought me an intense rush of pleasure. Adoration, I needed to be loved by other people. I needed men to want to sleep with me. I needed women to look at me and be like, oh my God, I wish I looked like her. I needed to be adored in order to feel safe. I needed constant validation from the external world. I'm funny enough, I'm pretty enough, I'm slim enough, I'm fit enough, I'm whatever enough. I needed that constantly. And excitement, I was addicted to like intensity, risk-taking, adrenaline, all of that. And there's a reason for that because of my childhood. So as I said, the eating disorders were a symptom. So how, and as I share my story, like allow yourself to go back to your childhood and see if any of this resonates with you. How do we heal all of this? Well, honestly, you need to hire someone. And I understand, before I go into this, I understand that not everybody is in a position to be able to hire support. That being said, if you can make it work in any way, please do so, because this is the best way, the only way to recover. You can get support on, if you're in England, from the NHS. I know there's like a ridiculously long wait list, but get yourself on there. CAMHS, if you're under 18, that's like the child's version of the NHS. There's loads of different therapists and things out there with different investment options. I actually have, I'm very excited to share with you. I had an intuitive hit today, and I've changed all my website to actually offer one-off coaching/therapy sessions. So you can actually just have standalone therapy coaching sessions with me. And that wasn't available before. So I've actually made that available now. So check that out. But honestly, how do we heal all of this? Hire someone who you trust, who you feel connected with to support you through your own recovery journey. Someone like myself who loves you before they have even met you, and who can mirror back to you how goddamn worthy and lovable you already are as they support you and guide you back home to self-love. Someone who has rewired their own fear of weight gain, who has done and continues to do the inner healing work for themselves. That's so important. And self-love looks like boundaries, setting boundaries for yourself and for other people. A boundary is different to a request. A boundary has consequences and an action that you take if that boundary is not honored for yourself and for other people. Self-love looks like putting yourself and your needs first, letting go of people-pleasing, expressing yourself, allowing yourself to speak up for what you believe in and what you want to say, and taking full ownership of that without worrying how the other person's going to receive what you want to say. Meeting yourself where you are at with love and compassion and gentleness. Compassion, self-compassion is everything on this journey to self-love. Kindness, self-gentleness. It looks like also exploring your values as a human. It looks like exploring who you identify to be and who you don't want to identify to be, and how you can change your identity. Because when you change your identity, which includes changing your values, your beliefs, your whole life changes. And that's a whole process to be supported through, but it's part of self-love. And of course, self-love also looks like reparenting yourself. A lot of inner child work and inner child connection, giving yourself your needs that you need, not the wants that you think you want, is getting to the root, and you need support to understand and to peel it all back to see what's gone on for you. It really is a journey, but the time, the effort, the investment in yourself, it's so worth it. If you could only taste, even for a second, what it feels like to live in total food freedom and self-love, you would start recovery in a heartbeat without a second thought. I promise you, you would find the money, you would do what it takes to support yourself to where you need to be. And if you would like support from me, then look at the different ways you can work with me. I'll pop them below as well. As I said, I've added some new ways you can work with me to make it even more accessible. And in the future, I have a big vision. Somehow it will happen. Of opening or creating some kind of recovery center that's accessible to people and that actually is really supportive and doesn't fuck people up. And I say that with love. People who are in the recovery center treatments, of course, they're there to help and to make a difference. But so many of my clients have been in inpatient treatment, and it's really not helped. The second they've come out, they've restricted again because they're not getting to the root cause. There's a lot of trauma in there. They're weighing themselves every day. Oh, there's so much I would change. So one day I will fix this problem that I see as a problem. So until then, reach out to me for support. I love you so much. Thank you for listening. Please share this with a friend, with anyone who needs to hear this. Please rate my podcast. I actually need to send the lucky winner of my Body Love Bite program, because she rated it and a 5-star review and sent me a screenshot, and she's won the Body Love Bite program. So if you rate my podcast, send me a screenshot, you'll go in the prize draw to win. And I just really appreciate it because it helps me reach more people. All right, my loves, I will see you next time. Much love. Mwah.